I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast, and a whole load of badass with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. This week, we talk about Caroline Flack and the assault charge. Should she be kicked off Love Island? Plus, we meet Juliet Azor, winner of the Great British Sewing Bee 2019, who's trying to persuade all of us to get our sewing needles out. And we talk to Sarah Knight, author of Fuck No, about why we should all learn to be more assertive when we're saying no.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four!
So, news story of this week that wasn't the election. I mean, I think she's probably very grateful for the election happening, because otherwise I think it would have been much bigger. Caroline Flack was arrested for allegedly attacking her boyfriend. Big question, should she be sacked from Love Island? I am going back and forth on this, because I personally think if this was a man, I would be without question saying, yes, he shouldn't be presenting Love Island. And I'm judging myself for my own hesitation over it. She attacked someone. This is an alleged domestic abuse situation. It hasn't been resolved. She has been arrested. She has a court date. I think he is now saying it was just a bit of a tiff that got out of hand and he feels very embarrassed. He doesn't want anything to do with it. But still, if this was a man, I think we'd be pushing to have him off the show, wouldn't we?
I think so. I do really think that she can't, because she has such a high profile. She's got 1.9 million Twitter followers, you know, and you're leading a show that's all about relationships as well. So I feel like I think this is going to do her some damage. I really do.
Now, what did you think about him coming back and saying, it was all a tiff, it got a bit out of hand, I feel embarrassed that we're even talking about it?
I think the key word there, if that's exactly what you said, is embarrassed. And for men, and I think the stats will show, that are in relationships where there is some form of domestic violence perpetrated by a woman, they do feel embarrassed, because they feel like, as men, it should not happen to them. And so the first thing I would say is, if the police turned up at her house or their house and she was arrested, something obviously went down. So I know we're using the word allegedly, but I do not think that in any scenario she should be presenting Love Island, because until it's resolved and until it is clearly explained exactly what happened, she is not, for me, the role model that young girls should have in terms of being able to go through that sort of scenario and then still be presenting that sort of show. I think Maya Jama should do it. I am in the Maya Jama camp for a start. But it is a thing of, and this week I was walking through the park and I saw a young couple having an all out sort of screaming argument, but it was perpetrated by the girl. Mm-hmm. I'm going to call her a girl because she was relatively young. And it was horrid the way she was treating her, I'm assuming, boyfriend. Yeah. And I think there is potentially a thing of, because we're not teaching young people how to have relationships, that the abuse is almost going two ways. And do we give her a platform which almost says it's okay to do whatever happened in that house that night?
Because that's what bothers me the most, that her boyfriend's coming out or you know, and saying that it was just a tiff that got out of hand. Like, tiffs, that's not a healthy relationship. Mm. You might have a disagreement with your partner, you might fall out with your partner, but getting it to the point where your neighbours or your partner or somebody is calling the police, that is not normal behaviour.
No. I mean, let's just remember, though, that we have just elected a Prime Minister who very recently had his neighbours call the police on him.
Well, it's true, but again, another scenario where we make this kind of like, oh, you know, it's just what happens. That is not a healthy dynamic. And like you're saying that, I don't think people realise that how dysfunctional that is as a relationship. And, you know, she is high profile and women are looking up to her. And if you start going, well, actually, no, it's okay to treat your partner like that. Mm. I just feel like that's...
And if it was a man, let's be clear, we'd be zero tolerance. Yeah, and absolutely. So for me, if we're going equality, it's zero tolerance.
Yeah. Agreed.
Off the air.
Because her partner posted a picture today, actually, on his Instagram. I was doing a little bit of stalking, obviously researching for the show. And he had posted a picture of him and Caroline with a love heart emoji. And I was like, wow, if that was a woman who'd been assaulted by her partner and then she posts that picture, I'd be like, are you okay, hon? Mm. That wouldn't...
We'd assume it was some form of emotional abuse.
Yeah, and he was probably controlling, and that's the only way she could stay in the relationship.
Yeah.
And it might still be exactly the same thing. Let's remember, and you said this, H, Caroline is the older party in this.
Yeah.
He's 27. This is her third engagement.
40, I mean, she does like to date. She has a pattern that I think is really fascinating, because if that pattern existed in a man, we would absolutely be questioning it.
Yeah.
So she likes to date younger men with a lower profile who sort of she is the upper hand and has the control in the relationship. And ladies, I mean, feel free, you know, if you want to date a younger man, I think we have all done it in this room. That's great. But I know that if she was a man of her age dating women of their ages and it was constantly about dating somebody with less status, less ability to kind of look after themselves, less ability to potentially get out of a difficult relationship, we would think that was strange.
All ending badly. So all having high octane passion, we're getting engaged, then ending badly. And now this scenario, we would be calling out and saying he's toxic. He needs to think about the sort of person he is before he goes into another relationship. And so I'm going to call the same thing in this scenario. It doesn't change because you're a woman.
No, agree.
And also to say that we don't know what happened. We don't know what their relationship is, but we can look at it and say, if you're on TV, particularly on a show that is about relationships, and one of the things that I love Love Island for is because I think it has brought out real discussions about toxic relationships and what is and isn't acceptable in a relationship context. Mm. If you're going to be the presenter of that show, you need a level of emotional awareness, I think.
Especially for a younger audience.
Yeah.
I might have a bit of leniency if it was an older audience. I can't think of a show for an older audience like this.
What was that Mr. and Mrs. show on ITV that Holly and Phil used to present?
Yeah, or like Wife Swap or something.
Would you be more lenient?
Slightly more lenient, because an adult audience just... they're not looking up to the presenter as a role model.
Yeah,
whereas a younger audience, I'm going to say specifically of girls, you know, will think she's amazing. They want to be like her. They want to have her life. They're looking at her on Instagram.
It's true. She's probably got more influence. But I just think anybody at any level, I mean, even Boris.
A bit more leniency, I'm just saying. Really? If it was a woman,
zero.
A bit more lenient. A bit more kind of... maybe you don't, until we know what's going on, you don't need to take them off air. Whereas this, I'm like, off air, no conversation.
I mean, what we do know is that her court date that's set, if that goes ahead, that will happen before Love Island starts again. So there's potentially a resolution which they can look at. But I have to say, based on this, based on the fact that police were called, she was arrested, clearly he was physically assaulted, that for me does not feel like somebody who should be presenting a show. Do we think this is indicative of a rise in anger and violence amongst women?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Really?
Yes. Mm. There is something in the air where, and I don't know where it's come from, but seeing women behaving in a more violent manner.
But
with each other, with partners, just in the street to passers-by. Not even a socioeconomics thing, just women just being more verbally and physically aggressive.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't necessarily seen that. I think sometimes I always wonder, there's a classic, isn't there, you know, when a guy sort of says his ex is crazy, you know, when traditionally you'd be like, oh yeah, she's totally crazy. And then you get to know the guy and you're like, oh no, you were driving her crazy. So there is a bit of me that's looking here and going, okay, well, maybe there's some dysfunction from her, but actually, could it be him that's driving her completely nuts?
Yeah, you know? That's true. We don't know. He could be.
Yeah, so when you see a girl really going off at a guy, most of the time I'm like, what has he done? Like, people don't get crazy like that unless somebody is making them crazy.
So you don't get crazy because you're a relatively balanced human being. Wow. So you don't get crazy like that unless somebody's making you crazy. But I do think there is... I feel really old saying this because I'm going to blame it on reality TV. I do think there is something about all of us living our lives at a heightened level of drama and thinking that it's, that actually we've had quite a dull week if we haven't had some massive explosion at somebody, because that's what happens on reality TV and we see reality
and
TV.
And even soap operas are like that,
Soap operas are like that. But particularly reality where it's supposed to be, in quotes, reality people living real lives. Mm. And of course they're not. You know, they're blowing up at each other because it makes good TV.
Yeah.
But I feel like for a lot of young people, that has become the norm of how you should behave.
So an example of this, hit the nail on the head. When all of the Housewives franchises started in the US, a lot of them were predicated on violence and women attacking each other, throwing drinks at each other, or that moment when someone's wig got snatched. And I don't know if it was art imitating life or life then starting to imitate art, but that almost then became the norm in terms of a dynamic of, again, that, you know, the drama. That's what drama started to look like. I can, hand on heart, me and my girlfriends at school would never behave in that way. Yes, we had arguments and yes, we were loud and rowdy, but not to that extent. And I feel like that's almost permeated what an argument looks like. You cannot just have a disagreement. It has to be arms flailing, rip off the wig type drama.
I feel like I've missed out in life because I've never thrown a drink over anyone.
It's a standard Tally or Made in Chelsea move.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah. That is, and also the drama that is in those shows, I hadn't really thought about it, but you're right. And it is, they do make these big deals. And I know it's kind of TV, but you're right, if you're watching a lot of that content,
you are going to start to think that's normal,
aren't you?
That's our hot take on the Caroline Flack incident.
She's watched too much reality TV.
Calm
down, Caroline.
She's created too much and it's gone into her brain.
Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
She'll get you talking.
We are talking sewing here on Badass Women's Hour XL. Do you know how to mend a hem? Could you sew a button back on your shirt? I certainly couldn't. But our next guest absolutely could, because she is the winner of the Great British Sewing Bee 2019. It's Juliet Azor. Hello, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Hello. Hi.
Hello. Lovely to meet you all.
I am a huge fan of the Great British Sewing Bee. I watched it. I watched you win. You made beautiful clothes.
Thank you.
Tell us, what is it like to be on a competition which seems to ask almost the impossible? It's like, knock up a designer dress, you have 2 hours, here's a curtain.
Oh, it was intense. It was intense. I mean, we had the show, we had the episode where we had to create something, you know, a summer party dress out of curtains or duvets or whatever it was. And it was intense. But I mean, we did it. Yay.
How long have you been sewing for? Have you always been, like, as a kid, were you there with a needle and thread or
Never.
Is there something? Is that
really? I only started, I got my machine in 2013.
What made it get the machine?
You know, it was one of those conversations I had with my mum. She went, you know, it would be nice for everyone to have something, you know, something you can do with your hands. So, because she's retired now, and she wished she was able to do something that wasn't, you know, office work. And I thought, actually, do you know what? I'm going to try sewing. I'm going to do a bit of sewing. So I went into Hobbycraft and got myself a sewing machine, and that's how it all started. Plugged in a DVD that came along with the machine and just followed instructions that way after work. So I'm a primary school teacher, but I don't teach at the moment. But at the time, after school, I would, you know, plug it in, do a bit of Yeah, tote bags, skirts.
To your mum's point, do you think there's a lost art in sewing? And I'm going to add in knitting. Mm. So as you were talking, we've still got it. My gran had the sewing machine table where the sewing machine was under the bottom of the table. You used to flip it round.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something I think that all families had because you made your own clothes. Yeah. And I remember she used to buy all the patterns and make her own dresses.
Yeah.
And it was a normal thing. And in school, we did textiles because you needed to learn how to sew. So, yeah. And I went to knitting classes.
I'll tell you
where have we gone wrong?
There's a generation, the generation in between. I think it's my mum's generation that it kind of went. That I'm not sure, but I think it's that was where we had that gap, because at that point, a lot of things were bought. People bought their own clothing rather than make their own.
It was the point when it became affordable, I guess.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah. I think that's where we had that gap. But it's really sad that now that is we've lost that again in schools, because you know that budget, you know, you've got the budget for creativity, you know, subjects and stuff like that have kind of been put to the back, and, you know, you don't get after school clubs. Well, you do have the odd teacher here or there, or teaching assistant who would set up a club for children to learn how to, you know, do crafty things here and there, but it isn't a priority for schools anymore, and it's really sad.
Do you think we'll get back to a time when, you know, I remember my grandma, actually, she used to make everything.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, she would make us clothes for our, like, Cindy dolls when we were kids and stuff. But for her, like, you know, at that time, especially like going through the war, you would buy patterns and then you'd buy your fabric.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really sustainable way of doing fashion. And I wonder, do you think that we might get back to that?
It's actually really trendy these days for people to create their own. You do have those who prefer to upcycle. So you buy from the charity shop and then turn it into something more trendy. And you do have those who create from scratch.
Mm.
And it is becoming really trendy and, you know, I think it's cool these days for people to actually create their things. And, you know, anyone who asks, you know, where'd you get that from? I made it. And they go, really? Can you teach me? And I've been, you know, I've had more interest from a lot of people through social media and in real life asking to come along and learn how to sew. And I'm really pleased about it. And I'm pleased that, you know, I'm able to use this platform that I've been, you know, that I've, you know, I've gotten to inspire more people to whip that sewing machine out and dust it off. I've got a friend who I took fabric shopping today. She bought her very first fabric and she's going to make a dress for our friend's wedding. A friend of ours is getting married next year and she's going to make her actual dress for it. And that makes me so happy.
Do you struggle to buy clothes now, though? Now you know that there's probably an awful lot of stuff in the shops that you're like, actually, I could probably knock that up really quickly. Yeah. I know the fabric. Yeah. Do you find it a bit hard to like buy kind of everyday fashion?
I buy clothes. I still buy clothes, but I buy knitted clothes like this. I can't knit.
Yeah.
So I do buy those because you need those as well. But there are certain things that I look at. I go into Zara and I'll look inside and, you know, look at how things have been constructed so I can go home and make it for myself.
Yeah.
So I look at clothes in a completely different way than I used to in the past. And I think that has changed. I want to investigate and know how it's been created rather than buying it. And sometimes I see really, really cheap clothes and I think, how is that possible that, you know, that dress can cost £25? I know how long it takes to create something like that. I know how much a good quality piece of fabric would cost to make a dress like it. So I kind of look at clothes completely differently. You know, compared to the way I looked at them in the past.
Which is a great thing, I think, for everyone to have, right? Because it would help with the way that we consume clothes and fast fashion.
Yeah.
Is there a cathartic side to this as well? And can you start without a sewing machine? Because, again, I remember school, we used to have to hand stitch.
Hand stitch. Yeah. Well, if you are after something that would last, I think, you know, hand sewing can create, you know, can produce a nice, durable piece of clothing, but sewing machines are better because your stitches are more, you know, firmer. They would last. Your clothes will last longer.
Yeah.
But, you know, hand stitching is good for like hems and you need that, or decorative stitches and that. But you need a sewing machine. But then, you know, people can get sewing machines from, you know, secondhand shops. People sell their sewing machines when they want to get an upgrade. So they put it on, you know, those websites where you can buy things online secondhand. So I think it's quite accessible and, you know, they're quite cheap. They're good you know, under £100, you know, entry level sewing machines out there. So I do not think it's far away from, you know,
cathartic. So I remember the sound of the tapping of the machine. You know, the for listeners at home, that clicking, and then what, you know, you have to use your foot. So there's a lot. Basically, you can't be thinking about, well, maybe my grandma's putting on the dinner and everything else. You can't be on social media at the same time as sewing a dress.
Well,
I'm always on Instagram.
No, I mean, sometimes there's certain projects that I do that I film, so I would. Just to show people how to do certain things. I do get, you know, requests from people you know, asking, how do you actually, because I love sleeves. I love sleeves. I've got a thing for sleeves. So I do have people asking, how did you create those sleeves? Or how do you go from that to that? And I'll do, you know how you do, I call them, I can't remember. You know, on your Instagram stories, you can have those step-by-step photos showing instructions.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
You know, visual instructions. Yeah. And I love to do that. So I can. And I tell you sewing machines are much quieter these days. They come so quiet.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So you can...
disappointed about that,
you do have the noisy ones, but, you know, most sewers sew when the family's asleep because it's more of a therapeutic thing. It's more of a me time hobby. Where, you know, the kids have gone to bed or, you know, whoever it is, you can just go into your little space and have that time to yourself and just...
Make something.
If somebody wants to start sewing, where do they start? I remember when I was very young, we had sewing classes at school and I was started with a hat, which was, I'm going to be frank, a disaster. I managed to sew up the bit where you put your... Thank you. That's what I thought. Yeah. I thought it was quite hard. What should people be starting with?
Tote bag. Easy.
A tote bag.
Start with a tote bag. Or makeup purse. Yeah. Makeup bag. Yeah. Something without a zipper. Something very, you know, tote bag's easy.
Can you find patterns and ideas online or do you have to go into the shop and buy them like in the old days?
Online, things can be found online. There are lots of workshops. So I conduct workshops. I do, I teach online. Not online, not yet, actually. It's in the works. But I teach, you know, face-to-face workshops, one-to-one and in groups as well. There are so many workshops out there in fabric shops and craft shops. You do have colleges where they, you know, have evening classes for people, beginners, to learn how to sew. There are online, you know, platforms where people can pay, you know, subscribe to learn how to sew, you know, watching videos. And there's so much on YouTube. I learned to sew on YouTube.
Did you?
Everything I know now.
Is there a big kind of sewing social media community in the way that there is for like baking and things like that?
It's massive. It's massive. And it's so, people there are so supportive. They're really lovely people who actually want to, they want you to do well. And I found it so, so encouraging and it's pushed me to keep going.
There's no like sewing jealousy. We were talking earlier about like people being divided over politics, and you know, there's no sewing jealousy, no sewing sabotage, none of that.
Not that I know of. Good. Not actually. That's good to know. There are some safe spaces.
Yes.
It's a very supportive community, and I love the way you know, people. You watch, you know, obviously people share things on social media, so you do see how people come out to support someone who's, you know, done a launch, a pattern launch or book launch or I mean, I did actually organize a bit of a social, well, not a social, social. So I organized myself and another, she's a GP who loves to sew as well, who lives not far from me. We organized that in southeast London where we live, and it was so lovely how people just came along to just chat about making, and we swapped gadgets, and you know, it was just, they're so lovely. Yeah. And nice. I love that. I love that feel about it.
So I really quickly want to shout out my dad right now. So my dad is only 20 years older than me. When I was 8, we went to John Lewis. He bought fabric and he made all of the curtains for his new flat. Double lined because he knows how to sew. Yeah, with the sewing machine. Cool. I sat there and I watched him make these curtains over 2 days.
Amazing. Where did he learn?
From my gran. Because it was standard, right? You grow up in a house with a sewing machine, you just know. You know, it's just, it's life.
Yeah.
And so he was like, I want these curtains. I want them double lines. I'm going to buy my own fabric. I'll make them. And I sat there with him. Mm. And as he went through it, and as he was talking, that visual came back to me. And I was like, my dad, he would have been 28, you know, young guy at home making his own curtains.
I mean, there's so many men who sew, and they sew, most of them sew for their kids, for their wives, for their partners, for themselves. Mm. I mean, Ricardo, who was on the show with me as well, Ben, they're so creative.
So good.
They fabricate some really cool, you know, cool designs. And Ricardo created a bomber jacket from, you know, an old sofa he found lying on the street.
Wow.
Yeah, he just ripped it apart, used a leather to create himself such a cool
jacket. Everyone needs to put that on their Tinder profile now. Needs to be good at sewing.
Can I sew? Yeah. Can I bake?
Yeah.
Useful things. Yeah. Juliet, thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us. If people want to learn from you or see your videos, where should they be looking?
They can find me at @JulietOozle_ or go to my website, sewnatural.com. So natural.com.
Nice. Thank you so much for coming in and inspiring us to get sewing.
Thank you very much.
The Fempire Strikes Back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But our next guest is doing intense social change through books. So Sarah Knight is the author of the best-selling The Life-Changing Magic of Not Giving Up. Beep. And her new book is called F No. Our producer, Johnny, has asked me to say he's really sorry if anyone's offended by any of the titles. I hope at this time of night you're not, but you never know. It's her new book is all about how to stop saying yes when you can't and you shouldn't or you just don't want to. And given that we are entering the season of a gazillion holiday parties, and as a somewhat introverted soul, I like to say no to a lot of them, I'm very excited to have her here. Sarah Knight, welcome to Badass Women's Hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
So why do we find it so difficult to say no?
Well, I think that women in particular have been socialized since a very young age to be agreeable, to be, to serve people, to smooth things over, to make sure that everybody else is okay and happy and isn't getting their feelings hurt. And that translates into making it very difficult for us to say no.
So you have called yourself the anti-guru, because your books are probably filed in the self-help section, but they're sort of about stopping worrying about what everyone else is thinking and just getting on with it. Why do you think they have been so popular? No, go on, fine.
Sorry to interrupt you. I think that You know, my books are basically self-help for people who think they don't like self-help, of which I am one of those people. And I think that they've been resonating, you know, in part because of the language that I now know I cannot use on your show, so I will not do. And the humor, you know, and there is inherent humor to be found in bad words. Everybody gets a little bit excited about somebody else saying them. But I'm also just trying to say with all of my books, the things that we've all been thinking in our own minds and have maybe been afraid to say or weren't sure we were allowed to say or weren't giving ourselves permission to say. So that, I think, has been very liberating, and that's why people seem to be coming to the series in droves.
So, Sarah, what I love about your books is that for a long time, a lot of self-help was very male lens type self-help. And I consumed a lot of it. And then there was a wave of more female lens self-help, but it was very soft. And so having something that is basically no nonsense really resonates, because I think we'd got into a space where it was all a bit like, this is how to wash your hair. This is how to, you know, just stuff that isn't really going to get us through life. But actually knowing how to say no, because it's a Tuesday and you don't want to have sex, really important. Knowing how to tell your boss no in your own words, and being totally comfortable with saying no, really, really important, without having to sugarcoat it in a way that a whole wave of books have. So I just wanted to put that out there. I like your style.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, because that's what I'm going for. And the thing is, saying no is taking a stance, and it shows your strength, and it shows that you know what you're worth and what your time, energy, and money are worth and how you value them. But it doesn't have to make you a jerk. It doesn't have to make you a bad person. And what I'm trying to explain to people is that you can do it in a way that is honest and polite, but is also a little bit selfish, and that's okay. And I'm just really trying to help put the words into people's mouths if they haven't known exactly how to express themselves until now. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It can be no to an invitation, no to doing a favor, no to giving somebody a loan, no to staying late at the office, or no, I don't want to come home with you tonight.
Sarah, you seem like a professional knower. I want to know, when did your no journey start? Have you always been really comfortable with saying no? Or has this been a little bit of, you know, a journey for yourself to get to the point where you can, you know, confidently write a book on it?
Well, the answer is no. I was not always comfortable. I spent probably the first 30 years of my life, I'm 41 now, being in a constant state of people-pleasing and overachieving and saying yes to all kinds of things because I thought I had to, because I felt obligated or guilty, or, you know, simply to help other people, which is not inherently a bad thing to want to do. But if you do it too much and you don't pay attention to your own limits, then you will swiftly become a blubbering mess, which is what happened to me about 5 or 6 years ago. And that was when I both quit my corporate job, moved from New York City to the Dominican Republic, where I'm speaking to you from today, and also started writing the No Beeps Given Guides, of which there are now 5. And that was really when I started to find my voice and my strength and be able to say, you know what, the way I've been doing it has not been working. It sent me into a panic spiral, and I don't want to live the rest of my life like this. So I fixed it for me, and now I'm helping other people fix it, either before it happens or before it's too late.
For anyone who is not good at no, where do they start? What's the kind of first thing to maybe practice or have a go at saying no to?
Well, the first thing you have to be able to do is say no to yourself. So you need to set your own boundaries. You need to consider, as I said before, what your time, energy, and money are worth to you and what you want to spend it on, and really be honest with yourself. And the next step is expressing it to other people. I prefer a very simple approach. I call it a hard no, and it's just no thank you, no I can't make it, I don't have time, I can't afford it. Anything like that, up to and including no thank you, I don't want to do that, is okay, and simple is better. The point is to do it swiftly so that you are not leaving somebody hanging. You know, be polite about your response, be honest, and make it nice and short and sweet. But I also have several other types of no that I talk about in the book, some of which are easier for beginners, and one of those is called the no and switch. And that's when you say no to the thing that has been asked of you or offered to you, but you offer a different thing that does work for you. Mm. So, no, I can't come to your dinner party. Maybe your reason is because you don't like the other people that are going to be at the party, but you don't want to tell your friend that because it would be rude. So you say, no, I can't make it to your dinner party, but I'd love to see you one-on-one. Do you have time for lunch this week? So the no and switch is a good way for beginners who are uncomfortable completely ripping off the Band-Aid and saying no to say their no and then offer something that is more acceptable and tenable for themselves.
I've got a question for you, Sarah. Just recently, you'd be quite proud of me. Like, I'm getting really good at saying no. And I got asked to do this kind of work thing, and I said no. And then the person asking came back really hard and was like, oh, well, please, will you do it? And almost tried to take me on a little bit of a guilt trip around it. How do you deal with situations like that?
Oh, I have an entire chapter on
guilt. Oh, do you?
But,
okay.
It's called Let's Talk About Guilt, Baby. And basically, you know, I have, as you would probably imagine, a pretty logical, rational, and simple approach to dealing with guilt. And what I like to do, if somebody is pushing really, really hard, and they're trying to make you feel bad about it, they're actively trying to make you feel bad about it, I would say, I'm really sorry, but I think that the fact that you can't take my no for an answer says more about you than it does about me. And that is really, that's the final frontier. What I talk about also in the book is that there are lots of people who will react completely naturally and normally to you saying no to something by saying, oh, well, that's too bad. I wish you could be there. They're just saying their truth, just like you said your truth, that you couldn't make it. So don't get too freaked out about somebody very naturally responding to your no with a statement of, oh, I wish it was different. You can say, yeah, I wish it was too. And then the conversation is over. Sometimes people are going to, you know, push a little bit harder and ask if, you know, are you sure? Could you reconsider? And you're allowed to just say, no, I really can't. You know, thanks so much for asking.
Yeah.
Thanks for inviting me. But the answer is still no. Good luck. And yeah. Most people don't want to be jerks. They're not going to take it further with you because it just took them a couple rounds and they're like, oh, now I get your answer. But if they're really putting the guilt trip on,
okay,
you can just turn it around on them.
Thank you so much, Sarah. We've loved chatting to you. Sarah Knight's new book, F No, is out now. How to Stop Saying Yes When You Can't, You Shouldn't, or You Just Don't Want To. 1, 2, 3, 4!
This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour, HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.